Are you a professional pillow fighter or a 9-to-5 low-cost time travel agent? Or maybe real estate sales on Mars is your profession? It doesn't matter. Whatever it is you do, however complex or intricate, Monday.com can help you organize, orchestrate, and make it more efficient. Monday.com is the one centralized platform for everything work-related. And with Monday.com, work is just easier. Monday.com, for whatever you run. Go to Monday.com to learn more.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Election College, episode number 289, Herbert Hoover, part 2.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, this is what I like to call the car edition.
It is. This is not the first time we've recorded in a car, but
and it probably won't be the last either.
You know what? That's probably true.
We have combined between the two of us, we have 3 children. We're at my sister's house, who has another child, and they're all 5 or under. And needless to say, the car is the quietest place to record a podcast.
Yeah, which is kind of nice, actually, the car, because it's a rental.
And the heated seats.
I know. I totally feel like I just... Never mind. Peed myself.
Oh, my goodness. I think we'll have to put an explicit tag on this one. All right, so we're talking about Herbert Hoover, and we mentioned during the last episode that this one might take a little while, so we'll see if we can wrap this up in 2 episodes or if it'll take 3 or 5 or 12. Probably not 12. Anyway, we're at the point where good old Hoover is the Secretary of Commerce. We heard about all his humanitarian work. We've heard about his childhood, and... Really, the Secretary of Commerce had a little bit of influence over the radio and the Radio Act of 1927 really changed that and allowed the Secretary of Commerce to have that kind of authority and the ability to bring radio control and the things that went along with it to the Senate floor.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you think about it. Because radio, unlike the podcast, is kind of controlled by the government. Like, you can't just say, you know, I peed myself or something.
Like that. Right.
Yeah, you can say that. But there are things that you can't say over the radio waves because, well, government says you can't.
Yeah.
And just a little tidbit, Ben, I worked in radio.
Yeah, that's right.
And we had to show that we primarily existed for the benefit of getting information out there. So like whenever you hear the, you know, emergency broadcast tests and stuff like that, that's largely because of Herbert Hoover saying, hey, government needs to have its hand in this. And, you know, no matter if you feel like government should have its hand in this, that, or the other thing, turns out that this is probably a good thing because, well, if you're listening to the radio, and a natural disaster is happening or something like that, you want it to be a service.
That's right. I almost never listen to the radio.
You know, I don't either.
I mean, I listen to the radio as in device, but as far as just turning on the radio and listening to it, I listen to podcasts like crazy. I listen to music, though not as much as I used to. I don't listen to like traditional over-the-air radio anymore.
I do sometimes, like, now, right now, because I'm in Pennsylvania, and I, you know, miss home every now and then.
Yeah.
Well, our radio station, our AM radio station in Cincinnati, you can hear.
Wow.
Here at night, yeah.
That's incredible.
It's like, hey, there's home. It's, like, crazy. It's heard in, like, 28 states. But
that's nuts.
You know, the thing is with this newfangled rental car that I've got, I probably know how to do the podcast or, you know, Bluetooth easier than regular terrestrial radio.
Does it even have a CD player in it? Oh, yours does.
It does. It's really
small. A lot of new vehicles don't even have CD players in them anymore.
Technology.
Here we go again, talking about rental cars.
We're supposed to be talking about Herbert Hoover, and the people are wanting... I bet we're being sped up right now.
Probably.
Or hung up on. Do you hang up on a podcast?
Well, the Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 comes along, and a lot of stuff gets messed up. Really takes out a lot of levees, and a lot of property gets damaged and people get displaced from their homes and stuff like that. And it doesn't really fall under the Commerce Department, but the governors of several different states that were, you know, kind of bordering the Mississippi said, "Hey, Hoover, you want to help us?" And President Coolidge is like, "Don't worry about it, Hoover. You don't get to decide if you want to help them or not. I'm making you help them."
Yeah. So what ends up happening is, and maybe we should back this up, just to back the train up just a little bit, because here...
Turn the beat around.
Oh, man, I've been singing that. I can't get it out of my head. Yeah, sorry. And now you brought it up. So it's dangerous, ladies and gentlemen, to get two cousins together.
It is.
Anyway, you've got the train backing up with the whole cabinet. You know, Secretary of Commerce. Who is the Secretary of Commerce? Do you know who the Secretary of Commerce is? Not off the top of my head. I shouldn't have said that.
I don't know it either.
So Hoover is the Secretary of Commerce, and they call him like the undersecretary of every other cabinet position because he's got his hands, fingers, or some people might say tentacles, in every single facet of the cabinet. And he really begins to overshadow Coolidge himself. And one really cool thing, and I guess it's not, I don't know, you have to take history at its, in light of the era that it's in, right?
Right.
And Hoover really sees the treatment of African Americans during this disaster in the Mississippi River Valley. He sees this as, wow, this is terrible because black farmers are being prevented from leaving relief camps and... property that was intended for African Americans was being denied to them. So lots of horrible stuff going on, and Herbert Hoover is trying his best to work it to where African Americans are able to get their fair share.
Yeah, and this had to stay quiet because it would not have been popular, and he knew he wanted to run for the presidency. So he pretty much had to keep it quiet. He made sure that nobody found out about it by saying, "Hey, if nobody finds out about this, I'll make sure some African Americans get high-ranking positions when I become president," which would have just been a nice thing to do either way. But he had to use it as a kind of a political chip, and turns out they kept the secret.
Yeah. So August 1927 rolls around. President Coolidge says, "Hey, I'm not going to run for president. I've got my own issues. I just kind of don't really care for Hoover all that much."
Yeah.
"But I'm not going to go public and say, you know, Wonder Boy doesn't." And that's what he called him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to publicly denounce him or anything like that. But whatevs, I'm out of here. And Hoover says, "Let's go. Let's run for president." And that's exactly what he does.
Yeah, so he goes to the Republican Party, or the Republican National Convention, and people are kind of considering other people, but then nobody challenges him, really, at the convention. So first ballot, he's in, and they're like, "Okay, well, who should we get to be president? How about Charles Dawes? We've heard about Charles Dawes before. We might have even talked about him before."
Yeah, not too far ago.
And Coolidge was like, "I hate Dawes. If you select him, I will consider it, quote, a personal affront," end quote. So needless to say, they didn't select them. And instead, or actually I shouldn't say needless to say, sometimes saying that makes something happen that you didn't want to happen.
That's true. Needless to say is something that should be eradicated from what we say.
Well, sometimes it is needless to say.
Well, needless to say.
So they select Senator Charles Curtis, who's from Kansas, and Hoover accepts the nomination. Curtis accepts the nomination, and he says, look, I'm just planning on continuing the things that President Harding and President Coolidge put into place and go from there.
Yeah. So Hoover's like, I'm efficient, and I'm going to make sure that Republican prosperity continues, and Alfred E. Smith, and he's going to lose big time. And that's exactly what happens, because why does Al Smith lose big time? Well, you could say this, that, or the other thing, but a large part of it has to do with the fact that Al Smith is Catholic, or was Catholic, or depending on how you look at it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of on the national scene, not a very popular religion to be. And, well, if you look at the states that Smith won versus the states that Hoover won in that 1928 election, it's ridiculous.
It is.
Hoover painted the country red.
Yeah. And of course, you know, there are some other things that separated them, but mostly it came down to that bias against Catholics, which is really interesting, knowing, peeking into the future here a little bit. Not even 30 years later, we're going to have our first Catholic president. It's amazing how 30 years can change something.
Yeah.
And then, okay, peeking even more into the future, what was it? Almost less than 40 years after that, we have our first black president.
Yeah.
That's a pretty quick timeline considering how long it took to get even to a non-Protestant.
Yeah. And you think about it too, like you had an African-American president running for re-election against a Mormon.
Oh, wow. You're right.
Ever think about that?
That's true.
Which, you know, kind of like a little segue, because we're getting a little personal here.
Yeah.
You have a Mitt Romney chia head
in
your office.
I found it at Goodwill for $3.
It's spectacular.
It's really good.
My wife found Sophia from Golden Girls.
Uh-huh.
Chia head.
Oh, nice.
It's really awesome.
We might be given that chia head the Mitt Romney chia head away pretty soon. It's not really a chia head, I don't think. I think it's like a banker. I don't know what it is. Maybe it is a chia head.
You put seeds on his head.
Really?
It's gray, or not gray, green.
Oh, I've never done anything with chia pets, so.
Man, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you the crazy stuff that happens in Ben's house.
Join the group. Maybe win the chia head. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. There is somebody riding a bike or something by with a green halo.
I have a green helmet on.
I thought he wiped out. He didn't wipe out. Man. At Fast Times in Butler, Pennsylvania, ladies and gentlemen.
The car edition.
But the crazy things that Ben does and his wife do in their house with their two boys, they have like a house for a praying mantis.
Uh-huh.
They've caught two frogs.
Toads. Yeah.
And then what was the other thing? Oh,
butterflies. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Ben's wife gave my wife a caterpillar and we've been watching this caterpillar do its thing and it turned into a butterfly the other day.
Crazy.
So metamorphosis.
Why is that crazy?
It's just amazing. It happens inside.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you may not think it's crazy because like you're used to it.
But... I didn't get rid of it. The praying mantis is gone now.
Oh.
Because they only live so long. And so we thought it'd be better for it to go and do its thing before it was done for the season. Because they only last until it starts getting cold.
Oh.
So it'd be better if they could... You want the praying mantis species to survive. Man. So.
So the
although he'll get his head ripped off, so whatever.
Our caterpillar that was in its chrysalis, you know, emerged yesterday.
Yeah.
And... wouldn't leave us.
Did it ever leave?
No. Oh, it's flying around our RV right now. I hope it's alive.
You need to let it leave.
It needs to go to Mexico. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this is our last night together, by the way, everybody. I'm headed off in the RV.
So after Hoover, I guess we should get back to Hoover probably.
Oh, yeah.
After Hoover gets inaugurated, he holds this press conference and he says, look, this is a new phase of press relations. And this is kind of the genesis of the press room and all sorts of press conferences. You know, before that, certainly there was some correspondence between the press, but the president mostly used a spokesperson and stuff like that. Hoover says, I'm not using another person. I'm going to let people directly question me, directly quote me. I'll give them handouts with my statements on them. And they're not going to just have to guess what I think. I'm going to tell them exactly what they think. Also, he was probably thinking, people have been having too many typos in the past, so I'm going to make sure that that goes away. And in his first 4 months in office, he holds press conferences more frequently and to open to more people of the press than anybody ever had before that. Now, that lasted for a little while until the stock market crashed.
Yeah.
And then he was like, yeah, I'm going to be busy a lot, so don't, like, plan on me being around as much for these press conferences.
Back up off of my grill, yo. Yeah. But he really saw that, well, his vision for the presidency was, hey, America, government and private business, let's all get along. Let's really benefit people. And, you know, he's using these commissions, like the Research Committee on Social Trends, to survey the entirety of American society. Like, this was kind of a big thing. And, you know, you would never think about that.
Yeah.
About Hoover's administration, because he did kind of buckle down after the crash.
Right.
His wife is an activist. She, they say, typified the new woman of the post-World War I era. She was intelligent, robust, and aware of multiple female possibilities. And, like, all the while she's, you know, a strong woman, he's a strong guy, inventing a sport, Hooverball. That's to keep him fit. It's like a combination of volleyball and tennis.
Yeah.
And, man, we could probably start a whole league.
Whole Hooverball league.
That'd be amazing. I'm sure we're not the first people to have that idea.
Probably not.
He is doing a lot to reach out to the African-American committee. His wife, Lou, does defy custom and invites the wife of Republican Oscar the Priest, who was the only African-American member of Congress at the time, to tea at the White House. And get that, Ben, he's only the second person, only second to Booker T. Washington, which, you know, the flack that Roosevelt got.
Oh, yeah.
Over that.
Dang near impeached.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite. So Charles Curtis is the first Native American vice president, and we will talk about Curtis in the future. But this really helps with the visibility of issues that were specific to Native Americans and also just anybody else who wasn't, you know, white. So a lot of humanitarian efforts on multiple fronts, and then a lot of civil rights relationships that would encourage those civil rights taking place as well. So Hoover comes in and says, look, if we just keep going with these policies we've had for a while, poverty is going to be gone pretty soon. And there's a lot of technological progress at this point, and the stock market is just climbing. But then the stock market crash of 1929, which we affectionately refer to as Black Tuesday, happens. And here comes, not all at once, but pretty quickly, the Great Depression. And, you know, there is the possibility, yeah, the stock market crash certainly had something to do with it. Some of the policies in place certainly had something to do with it. But there's, like, a lot of reasons that are kind of a mix of why the Great Depression happened. But Hoover says, look, people didn't trust the financial system, therefore, the economy crashed. That's the long and short of it. That was his take on why the Great Depression was happening, which is, of course, they didn't call it the Great Depression at the time.
It's like, this sucks.
They were just like, this is a depression.
Yeah.
It wasn't great yet.
Yeah. Hoover does gather business and labor leaders together. It's like, hey, economists, get over here. Help me out. And what do? You blame Mexico. He says it's all Mexico's fault, because he's like, there's too many Mexicans coming across the border.
Yep.
He says, get out, Mexicans. And it's called the Mexican Repatriation Program. They forced migrated approximately 500,000 to 2 million people back to Mexico. And
that's crazy they don't have records on how many exactly there were.
I know.
Yeah.
They're all undocumented.
Yep.
And, you know, this continued. This wasn't just a Hoover thing. This was, like, continued until 1936.
Yeah.
But.
And, like, a while after that.
Yeah.
Not in this exact same way, but.
There's always an excuse to push people across the border.
Right. And deportation pops up more here and there in history. And obviously immigration reform and stuff like that pops up here and there different times in history. But it's never, I mean, it's always happening. Yeah. There's always people being deported.
Yeah. And the issue of like raising tariffs and things like that. Ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing new about what you see in the news today.
Yeah.
Hoover does remind me a lot of other presidents.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is crazy. So, really, he's wanting to encourage people to purchase American-made products, hopefully man-made, by raising tariffs, like Jason said. And the result was, well, the Depression actually gets worse a little bit. And so things happen and things change. And for a long time, Hoover is really opposed to these proposals from Congress to provide relief from the federal government, bailouts, essentially. And he says, please, Congress, don't impose basically a bailout. Then he starts creating a bunch of stuff that's basically providing bailouts. So his policies change a little bit after that.
Yeah, and then the whole concept of taxing people who make a certain amount of money at a higher rate than lower income earners.
Yeah.
He's championing that. And economists were like, I don't know if that's a good idea. Is it, you know? And so this is one very early evidence of how Republicans can disagree.
Right.
You've got some Republicans saying, no, we can't do this. But Hoover's like, nope, we're going to tax the rich at a higher rate.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, that's what happens. And it does nothing good for the economy.
No.
Things are beginning to unravel horribly on the domestic front. Internationally, Hoover is like, I don't care. Basically.
He's like, I've got a fire happening in my basement. I really don't need to worry about the neighbor's house.
Yeah. So he's thinking, okay, maybe we can do some things in the midst of all of the financial crises and different post-World War I issues that are happening. But I'm going to turn my focus to the good old USA. Forget you, rest of the world.
There's this really interesting thing that happens in 1932. Where a ton of veterans and their families from World War I come and camp out in Washington, D.C., basically on the White House lawn or right outside of it. And they say, look, we got promised we were going to get a bonus for being in the military during World War I. It was called the World War Adjusted Compensation Act. That was back from 1924. Well, they were supposed to get paid in 1945. And they come in 1932 and say, we want it now. Everything's so bad. We need it now. And the police are like, okay, guys, get out of here. And the people say, nah, we're going to stay. And the police are like, well, there's too many of them. We're going to give up. There were shots fired. A couple protesters were killed. A lot of officers were injured. And Hoover ends up sending Douglas MacArthur and some army forces to stop it, basically. He actually thinks, MacArthur actually kind of thinks he's fighting a communist revolution and decides that we're going to go in there and clean these guys out with military force. And of course, hundreds of civilians are injured, especially some veterans especially. So Hoover says, okay, please don't don't move the encampment. Like, don't let them stay where they are. Just, like, make sure they don't get out of hand. And MacArthur says, nah, I'm gonna do what I want. I'm gonna injure some of them. And Hoover's like, all right, I guess that's fine.
Yeah. All the while, Hoover is trying to run for president.
Right.
Re-election in 1932.
Yeah.
FDR weighs in. FDR, if you didn't know that, is his opponent in the 1932 election, says this man is nothing. Well, he shouldn't say. FDR says there is nothing inside the man but jelly, which that's kind of weird.
it is a little weird.
So everything is collapsing. Things aren't going well. At the Republican National Convention, they, of course, renominate Hoover as well as Curtis to be the running mate, and FDR wins big time. Like, the election 1928, how one-sided it was for Hoover was even more one-sided for Roosevelt. And yeah Roosevelt kind of squashed Hoover during his presidency. He kind of kept Hoover at bay quite a bit. It wasn't until Truman came into office. From what I understand, the first time Truman said, hey, Herbert, I need some help, it kind of brought a tear to Hoover's eye, because Truman recognized the fact that Hoover was a humanitarian.
Right.
And had done a lot of stuff after World War I to help feed Europe. And he calls on Hoover to feed Europe again in the post-World War II years. And Hoover lives to be 1964 and is championing conservative causes right up until the time of his death. But he was kind of the elder statesman that we don't really talk about too much, but there he was.
Yeah. It's really interesting, Jason, because not only when he was going around on his campaign trip to run for president again, not only were people who were very upset about the Great Depression and about the economic downturn and, of course, blaming him all for it, not only was that happening, but they were outside throwing eggs and rotten fruit and heckling him while he's speaking and trying to kill him. There was one guy that the Secret Service apprehended who was carrying sticks of dynamite, and another guy that actually removed some of the spikes from the train tracks that Hoover was on that train. So they really disliked him, and they basically, there's a lot of blaming of him of being uncaring about the people who were poor and who were needy. And okay, certainly there were probably some things, everybody can do more than they're doing, but like, this is the guy, like you said, that provided all this aid in the past and who continued to provide aid in the future. So was he really uncaring, or was he just in a situation where he wasn't able to help everybody? That's for you to decide. But it's just interesting, the public perception, for sure.
Yeah. So there you have it. Herbert Hoover. I always thought of Hoover as the guy who just kind of was in office because of the Great Depression.
Uh-huh.
His legacy was tarnished, but his legacy is much deeper than that. He actually has a lot of family that's still active politically, journalistically. Interesting set of values that you normally wouldn't see in expressed in current party politics, the way things are right now. But it would have been interesting to see what his take on some of the social and economic issues of today would be.
Definitely. It would also be interesting to see what the take on this podcast is by all of you who listen. You can let everybody know what your take is by going over to electioncollege.com/iTunes, or just going into iTunes and looking up Election College, however you want, and leave us a nice little rating and review. It really does. We haven't mentioned specifically the dance, which goes by the name of the Happy Dance that Jason and I do, but it does exist, and we do it.
It is the House Shakes.
Both houses, if we're in separate houses.
Yeah, especially mine. Because
that's true.
All you have to do is scratch your head and my house shakes.
Yeah.
Because I live in an RV right now. Hey.
Down by the river?
Yeah. Actually. Actually, the old RV is going to be heading out this week to central Pennsylvania, and I hope Ben will be joining me.
Yeah.
As there's a lot of history to be seen there in central PA. Love to get your suggestions on places that you have been. And, of course, there is Wheatland, the Buchanan house that I've never been to, even though I have family that lives like a mile away from there.
That's crazy.
Anyway.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I am ashamed of myself.
Good.
But nobody else in my immediate family would want to go.
Yeah, I'll go with you.
Come on out.
All right.
Hey, while we're sharing stuff about what we're doing, we'd love to have you join us in our group, electioncollege.com/group. That will take you to the Facebook group where we would love to interact with you.
That's right. If you're shopping on Amazon and you want to help us out, go to electioncollege.com/Amazon. Everything you buy will be the same price as you're used to, but we'll get like between 4 and 7% of it. Good old Jeff Bezos doesn't need all that money. We'll take 4% of it.
And a bell rings every time.
Yes.
Which means an angel gets its wings.
An angel gets its wings.
And that's exactly what happens.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.